if you start yelling and screaming, all it does is just makes her yell louder, which makes you yell out, and nothing gets accomplished. So I learned then. I didn't always put it into practice too well, but I learned then that you listen. You just shut up and listen. And there will be a time for you to speak, but you don't do it then. And I would have the same situation with bosses where we're in a stressful situation, a deadline was missed, for instance, and, you know, it was missed because of something I didn't do, overlooked, whatever it was. The situation was tense. She's getting upset and she's expressing herself. Well, I mean, I learned long ago, let them talk, okay? And that's not condescending. It's just that that's the way to handle a situation. Let her have the opportunity to have her say, and then she will either, if it is something that she needs to resolve in herself, then she'll either come to a resolution or you'll have an opportunity to speak. I got that. Miss Barnes was kind of a fiery lady, okay? So I learned a lot from her. I can see now I'm going to be in big trouble with some people. You know, I don't know. We had a reunion about, I guess it was maybe 5-6 years ago, and she was there.
Well, she'll be a business.
I don't know. if she is, I may phone it in.
You had started to say, before I so rudely interrupted you, that your mother was the one who was responsible for starting the suit. Could you expand on that? Or if you want, we can do that another day. It depends on how much time you have.
Okay, I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm fine.
Could you tell me more about that?
Well, I'll tell you, I can only give you my perceptions of what was going on. When you talk to my sister, she will know better because she was older. I mean, when this started, I was, I guess, third grade. I would have been, 8, 9 years old. And a lot of the things were going wrong, things that were going on around us at the time didn't really register. I was aware that my mother wanted me to go to that school. I didn't understand at the time.
Which is that school?
Chapel Hill Elementary is where we started, where I was going to school when we started the process.
And that was a black school?
That was a white school.
So you were?
I was in a black school at Northside Elementary.
Right.
She wanted me to go to the school which was nearest our home, which was the white school.
Chapel Hill.
I beg your pardon. Carver Elementary.
Carver.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I misspoke. Carver Elementary. I can only guess that it was because, I mean, I don't think she set out to be a history maker or a trendsetter. I don't think she set out to blaze any new ground. I think she just did it because that school was closer to our house. You know, I mean, you could almost throw a rock from our house up to the school. So, I mean, that's kind of my ideas as to why it was done that way. For myself, again, because I was used to playing with white kids and we lived in a neighborhood, excuse me, we all lived in a neighborhood together, I didn't understand why I couldn't go to that school. Pardon me. I didn't understand why I couldn't go to that school. And then I didn't understand what all the fuss was about me wanting to go there. You know what I mean? To me, it was, what's the big deal? I mean, so those were my perceptions at the time. There may have been more going on around that time. Again, that'd be a place that Reverend Manley can help you. I don't know if you had planned to speak to him or not, but the history around that time, I'm sure he would be a huge resource for. And my sister, of course, could tell you things were going on around our family in particular. She was gone off to school at the time, but you know, she and my mom and dad communicated, and so I'm sure she would have known a lot of the things that were going on then.
Can you expound a little bit more on the suit you ended up a few years later at the White Junior High School?
Yeah, by that time I had...
Was the suit settled, or you just...
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. the suit ran for about 3 years, I think. It started when I was somewhere along about in the third grade, wanting to go to the third grade, or getting ready to go to the third grade. Actually, must have been fourth grade, because I went my sixth grade year at Lincoln, and I went my seventh grade year at Chapel Hill Junior High, and the suit, the lawsuit was actually settled that summer, the summer that I went to school at, which would have been, I think, 62, and we had, when they, my memories of what was going on at the time was just being in the school board meetings. I wasn't aware when the suit actually started. I knew that they wanted me to go to that school and that I couldn't, and things were going on. But my first memories are of being in the school board meetings, sitting there in the school board meetings, and hearing the people talking. I didn't understand what they were talking about. I didn't go to any court cases, any court sessions that I'm aware of. And as I said, my mom didn't set out to be a trendsetter at that point. And then by the time it was actually resolved, part of the resolution, I think, came about as a result of integration was going on nationwide at that time. I don't think it was just my case. The reason that it was resolved. I know it was turned down and turned down and turned down. I don't know the reasons why. But I know that, and I was told that it had been turned down. To me, it didn't matter. I was at Northside with my buddies, and then I was at Lincoln with my 1 year at Lincoln with my buddies, so it didn't really matter to me. You know, it didn't have an impact on me at that time. Once I went to the school, that changed, but, you know, that again is the subject of another discussion.
Now, the three-year suit must be very expensive. Who were the lawyers involved, and how did your family handle the expenses?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I do remember that we got some help from Floyd McKissick. I don't know if the NAACP helped in that. I don't know. I don't know. I really don't. You know, I was at that age where money just kind of appeared when you needed it. And so, yeah, you know, when you're a kid, you can ask for anything, and it just kind of appears, you know. You don't always understand that somebody's got to go out and work for it or whatever. So, and again, I was naive. Maybe I was blocking things out. I don't know, but I don't know where the money came from. Whoever it was, if you're out there, I thank you.
So you say you lost the suit. Your mom
initially, well, they were turned down and turned down and turned down. She just kept going back, going back, going back. And until, you know, they said, we give, basically. It's like that woman in the Bible, that, you know, she just worried the man until he said yes.
So seventh grade, you started at junior high school.
Right.
What was the name of junior high?
Chapel Hill Junior High.
And that was on Franklin Street, where University Square.
Uh-huh. The junior high actually sat where Central Carolina Bank is now, and the high school was the rest of the area that University Mall, the University Square, pardon me, covers there. The back were Granville Towers, and that back there were playing fields. For the junior high and the high school, and then back behind that were fraternity houses and Cameron Avenue, going all the way back. It was an interesting time. Franklin Street at that point was, and it still is. It was a very nice street to be on. I mean, I could walk to school, even in the seventh grade. I could walk to school, and didn't have to worry about. You know, there weren't too many cars. Didn't have to worry about crossing streets and stuff like that. I remember I remember when they put that Hardee's in, that is down the street from University Square. I remember that. It was a new concept at the time. And then I remember when that went in. And I had, initially there was, well, an aside. Initially there was a lot of animosity toward us there. There were some people who were not negative. They were just kind of ambivalent to us being there. And as I got to know them, they were people whose families were, I don't know if you'd call them prominent, but were citizens of the community. I mean, Phil Walker's dad owned the service station. It was a Walker's, yeah, but it was downtown then, Walker's Skull. There was just one downtown.
Was he an ambivalent one?
He was, yeah, he was not. There are some that were... that were very vocal in their dislike for us being there. There were some that were very physical in their dislike for us being there. Nothing that I come away with any bruises or anything, but and there were some that were very, I won't say welcoming, they just weren't openly negative or ambivalent to us being there.
There were you the first to integrate to the junior high school?
Well, the three of us went at the same time. Myself, Ted Stone, and Sheila Bodie. We all, now, I'm not exactly sure when Ted and Sheila joined the suit, how that happened, but when the case was settled, I knew that they were going to be there. When I found out that summer that I'd be going to the white school in the fall, I knew that they were going to be there. And I remember thinking, that's great, at least I won't be there by myself. It didn't turn out that way because of our schedules. Their schedules were together, and then my schedule was separate.
What was your first day like at the junior high school?
I remember walking up the stairs, walking up the steps in the front of the school. And it's interesting, it was a little bit ominous because If you look at Lincoln, and I'm sure this is something that I have just perceived later on, but Lincoln, you know, is built on a flat. It's kind of one level. The junior high school, and even the high school, to get in them, you had to walk up steps to get to them. So anyway, I walked up the steps and into the school, and I believe I was by myself. I don't think that my parents went with me. And I walked into the school. Well, no, they did, because I had to find out where my classes were and so forth. And once that was done, I was kind of on my own, typical new kid in school kind of deal. But when I went to the class, I remember that I was the center of attention when I first got in there. And I was kind of expecting to see Ted and Sheila when I first got there, and I didn't. The hallways for me between classes, you know, how you change classes, and that was really the first year that I changed classes. It just wasn't a place that I look forward to being in. I'd get bumped, not knocked down, but bumped. You could hear the comments. Comments that, and sometimes people just talking directly at you. Why are you here? You know, you don't belong here. There was a couple of people who I felt kind of singled me out. For the most part, though, it was just a very... That part I could deal with. You know, I mean, that didn't seem to bother me as much as I just felt very much alone. I didn't really have anybody to talk to. Sometimes I even got the impression that the teachers didn't want me there. It's not that they didn't teach me. I didn't ever get that impression. But I didn't, I don't know, I just, it didn't feel, I didn't feel, what's the word? I just didn't feel like that was the place. I would go through my classes, my morning classes, and lunchtime, I mentioned my dad worked at a fraternity house, and that was right over could sneak through the hole in the fence. But before I realized I could do that, a lot of times I'd go out, there was a rock wall on the back of the school between the high school and the junior high, and I would just go sit out there just to get away and have some quiet, because it seems like always somebody was always calling me names. Somebody was always in my face about something. And just to get out there and to have some time to think. And, you know, well, maybe you don't. But anyway, just some time to get away from it. And then we had gym, which was, I didn't know what to expect. I mean, you go into gym class, you got to change. You got to get naked in there with people who you know don't like you. I had no idea what was going to happen to me. I'm blessed that nothing did. I don't remember anything going on there in the locker room or anything like that. I didn't have to worry about them getting too close to me. They didn't, you know, people getting too close to me. They didn't seem to be anxious to be close to me while we were undressed. I guess that was the thing with young men, you know, just that phase where we're all a little... Shy, that's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. Yeah, we're all a little shy. So I didn't have too much trouble there. But, you know, having to get in the shower with all these guys, having to take my clothes off and be around them, and then in the hallways just realizing how they would, you know, just come after me in a sense.
What kind of remarks would you hear besides, so why are you here?
Well, you know, I'm constantly being called boy. I'm constantly being called nigger. I'm constantly, you know, it's like being pointed at, always being, you know, you walk into, have you ever been to a party, you as a white male, and you walk in a room full of African-American people standing around talking, and the conversation may not stop completely, but it dies down a bit. And they may not look at you, but you know that they're aware that you're there. You know that their thoughts have changed at that point. It was like that everywhere I went. That was the feeling I got. The cafeteria... when I would walk into the cafeteria, I would get not quite, but the tenor in the room would change. It'd be like a dark cloud would come into the room, and somehow I don't know where it came from, but somehow I had enough confidence in myself, I guess is the right thing, that it didn't, I would think that could destroy a person. It hurt. I mean, I have, they're very painful experiences from then, but nothing that has made me hate any of those people. I really think they were just stupid. I mean, you know, I really, if they had just come and talked to me, And if, as the year went on, you know, a person here, a person there, would speak to me as though I were, you know, an equal human being, and maybe even have conversation with them. Not long, but some conversation. And as they got to know me, and as others got to know me, it began to change. I mean, there was still some that had their animosities, even up to my senior year in high school in 1966. That there were those that had that animosity, and who knows, maybe it's there today, I don't know. I've not seen some of those people in a long time. But they didn't take the time then. And again, I mean, I've always been a kind of a forgiving person, I guess, because I'm number three. You know, if I were number one, it'd be a different story. You know, number three child. But I've been a forgiving kind of a person, so that, you know, a lot of the things that they did, they did out of ignorance. It was just pure stupidity. It didn't hurt any less. I remember walking. I remember seeing the kids who had integrated the Arkansas, the Little Rock school, and, you know, the furor that was there. And the one thing that I did not want, and thank God it never happened to me, was I did not want to be spit on. I don't know why, I just didn't. But that was always a fear that somebody was going to spit on me, you know. And it was that kind of thing. I got pushed around in the hall. When I went over to the high school in the 10th grade, the seniors had this, they called it a tradition. I didn't see them doing it to a whole lot of people, but they had this tradition where, you know, your class ring, the class ring you get, they turn it around so the stone part is to the palm of your hand, and they would pop people on the head. Well, I mean, I was getting hit from all directions, you know. I thought it was stupid, and I didn't do it when my turn came in. I could have, but, you know, that's what they did. Maybe that was, I don't know. I try not to read anything in their form. There was one, I mean, it wasn't all bleak. There was one teacher who really, who I really looked up to. He brought me in early to his class after school one day. And he asked me, you know, if I was having a problem with the work. And I said, I mean, you know, some of it was stuff because we studied different stuff at Lincoln than we did there. You know, in the sixth grade, they're preparing you to go on. And so I didn't get some of the things the other kids had. I was hustling to catch up. He asked me if it was a problem. I said, well, I mean, you know, I don't know the stuff, but whatever. And he let me know. He told me, you can do this. You can do this. And if I needed any help, I could come to him. But the thing that stuck with me more than anything was that there was somebody. Now, you know, you know your family believes in you. You know your brothers and sisters believe in you. They tell you, and it's like, yeah, thanks, okay? But here's somebody who had absolutely no vested interest in me or my success or failure, telling me I can do this thing. And he has stuck with me all these years. I only had him 1 year. That was that year. Okay? And I have remembered that all this time. I can remember him. He came and he sat down on the edge of his desk. I was sitting on a seat on the front row. And he talked to me. And I remember that. It wasn't all bleak. That was consolation for me. And then I had times, like I said, when I could get away. So it wasn't like I had to be subjected to it at all times, because after school I didn't associate with them. I didn't have to ride the bus home with them, because I could walk, or I could go over, you know, where my dad works. You know, weekends and so forth, I never saw them. If I went to football games and that kind of thing, I would initially, at least I'd go over to Lincoln, and I didn't have to worry about, you know, being the only black kid in the stadium, you know. Although, you know, it did give me, in retrospect, and I thought about this, it gave me kind of an awareness of when this, I know it's going to sound really strange, it gave me an awareness of being around black people. I guess those were some fairly significant formative years for my psyche on some level. And it did. I worked at one point on a I was in class up in Kingston, New York. There are not a lot of black people in Kingston, New York, okay? And I was beginning to feel that same kind of trapped feeling or the same kind of being on an island as when I had gone to junior high. And then my brother-in-law met me in New York and took me, went up to Harlem, and I was like, oh man, it's like being back home, right? He jokes about that. But, I mean, it was that same kind of thing. Although it was a traumatic period of my life, there was something that was kind of instilled there that I really didn't understand what it was until much later on. But just having to go through that experience and deal with it. I could have gotten into a whole lot of fights. I could have gotten in even more trouble. And maybe that's what they wanted. I don't know. Again, I try to walk that fine line of not judging what people's motives are and what their motivation is. But I didn't. It taught me to deal with it. Now, I think some of that came from prior experiences and knowing that or understanding that I go back to the fight with Mickey. Remember I talked about that? I mean, I would have been crazy to hit one of those kids. And I'm the only black kid in the hall, you know. I might have done a Jimmy Hoffa thing, you know. I'm being facetious, obviously, but you know what I mean. I mean, I'm pretty sure that I would have taken the brunt there. So I've kind of wandered in my explanation of how I felt then, but it was traumatic. I mean, it just. That first day, just not knowing what to expect, you know, I mean, and when I went there, I remember being kind of excited about it, you know, looking forward to it. Again, because I thought that I knew white people from the people that I had lived around. The kids across, well, by that time, Mickey, the guy I got in a fight with, he had moved. He and his folks had moved. But Johnny, the guy who lived across the street, whose family owned the store, he and his older brother were both at the school there. They were very much on the outside. You know, I mean, it was like, well, okay, we know he's here, and I know I'm going to see him when I go home, so whatever they're doing, I don't want to get involved in it because, you know, it could cause problems later on. Now, his older brother's much older. You know, they just didn't ever seem to be that type of people, and I think it was because they got to know me from our regular interaction at home. Or not regular, but from our interaction at home. Okay, so.
Were they your advocates?
No. Mm-hmm. No, but they weren't aggressors either. I don't know that I had an advocate until later on.
In junior high school or high school?
By that time, it was, in the junior high school. Because after a bit where I began to have some other interactions, like junior varsity teams, that kind of thing, I went to some sock hops dances. It was easy because, you know, the lights were low and you kind of blend in around the edges there, and you know, people know you're there but they don't see you, so maybe you're not really there, you know what I mean? I went to some, and that was early high school and high school. So I mean, you know, I began to become a little more, I just got a little more involved. I had some friends, people who, you know, not the kind, well, let's just say closer associations, okay, a little more than acquaintances. They were never going to invite me over for dinner, I don't think, at least not at that point. but they did, you know, they helped me through some things. I mean, we could study together. We didn't, you know, not in the seventh grade, I didn't get much of that, but in the eighth grade, ninth grade stuff, we could study together. You know, I'd see them in the library. We could share information. We could share things, books. I remember borrowing books. There was, I guess my first advocate was a young lady. And I don't know how that came about. Well, yeah, I do too. She was new to the school in the eighth or ninth grade. She was eighth grade. She was new to the school. And in a sense was going through a little bit of the same thing that I was. And, you know, when I would be out at lunch, she'd be out at lunch. We had that same schedule. And we just started kind of talking at, you know, arm's length. And so if there were an advocate, I guess, she might have been it. I don't know.
In eighth grade, ninth grade, did you still feel as though you were on an island?
It was getting better because then we had more kids that were coming in. Each year we had more black kids coming in. I don't know that it necessarily increased the level of acceptance, but the feeling that I was there kind of by myself was not as great because I was able to see other kids. I had other black kids in my classes and stuff like that. So, you know, as the numbers grew, then the, kind of the attitude, well, maybe the attitude didn't change, but at least the perception did change.
Your perception?
My perception, yeah.
Did you still have that feeling when you walked into the lunchroom that
no, not as bad. Not as bad. For two reasons. Well, for two reasons. Number one, because the kids, like I said, because there were more black kids there to interact, somebody else had probably changed the tone before I got there. And the other was I just quit going to the lunchroom. I did. I reached a point where I just stopped going to the lunchroom. And actually, that happened in the seventh grade. I would try not to go to the lunchroom. To capture.
Did you ever share with Ted and Sheila what they went through? And was it similar to what you had experienced?
Actually, no, we haven't. I don't think we've ever talked about it. We haven't.
Could you contrast the teaching or the teachers? Between Lincoln High and Chapel Hill Junior High.
When I first went there?
Yeah.
Well, I knew at Lincoln that the teachers, pardon me, as I mentioned, had a, were concerned about the whole youth. If I can state it that way. I mean, they had some interest in how you were maturing and learning, what you were learning socially as well as educationally. When I got to the junior high, I wasn't as aware of that. It was more a teacher. I mean, here's the material. Kind of deal. Anything outside of the teachers at Lincoln could have been involved with what went on outside of the classroom. I'm not saying that I don't remember if they did or not, but I mean, if the teachers needed to patrol is not the right word, but be in the halls during the class breaks and so forth down at Lincoln, they were, and they were talking to kids and, you know, that kind of thing. I don't, you know, and when I got to the junior high school, I don't recall that. The bell would ring and everybody would just kind of empty into the hallway. I don't remember seeing teachers there and that kind of thing, you know, because I probably would have sought some shelter if they were there. But
so there was no help from the teachers when you were getting bumped?
No, I didn't bring it to them. I mean, because it was not knowing what to expect, not knowing what should have been happening. I mean, to me, this could have been an initiation, I guess. It took me some time, aside from the name calling, it took me some time to really understand that some of these were malicious acts. That the folks were carrying out. So, boy, that sounds kind of rough, doesn't it? The things that were happening were purposeful. And, you know, I didn't go to the teachers with it. I don't know that it would have mattered, because I didn't get the sense from the teachers that they were particularly thrilled that we were there. On a whole, I mean, there were the exceptions, of course. They didn't teach the same way, and again, that might have been just me, because I was playing catch up during that period. It might have, you know, the material that they were giving us was things that I guess they expected us to be able to pick up on quickly, because we'd had some background, and it just kind of, here it is. Now if I really had a problem and needed to go back and talk to them, I believe that they probably would have helped me. But at that time, I just, you know, I don't think they will. So I just need to tough it out myself. That's how the conversation came about with Mr. Vaughn, as a matter of fact, the gentleman I was telling you about. I mean, that was one of the things I told him. I just figured that, you know, nobody wanted to help. He didn't care. So I was just doing the best that I can, just trying to tough it out.
Did he comment on that?
Well, he did, and that's why the comment that you can do it. You know, if you need help, let me know, but I know you can do it.
Did you feel as though you were treated any differently by the teachers at the junior high school versus the other students, the white students? They call on you less, take you less seriously?
Well, I got called on less. I felt I got called on less. At the time, that didn't really matter. I don't know they took me any less seriously. I sometimes felt, and this could have been, I mean, one of those preteen and early teen things, that, man, they are really being hard on me when they grade my papers and that kind of thing. I mean, I thought that was really good. I put a lot of work into that. And that was a little disheartening sometimes. But again, you know, that's a judgment of me saying I did pretty good on a 5-page paper that said nothing, you know, to them. So part of it was I had to learn also. Again, I was kind of going into a different value system. Value system meaning there you were there to learn as a student. I'll try to explain this, because it's kind of, I'm having trouble putting it together in my mind, so hopefully I can get it to come out of my mouth right. But at Lincoln, I got a sense that they were concerned with me as a whole person. At Chapel, once I got over to the junior high school and in high school, for the most part, I think they were interested in me as a student. Now, they didn't teach me any less. They just, some of the things around it, things that would... if we were talking about the Civil War, okay, at Lincoln, and I didn't study the Civil War at Lincoln, so I'm only guessing, but just from my experience, I believe that I would have had a better understanding of what we as blacks, what our role was in helping in the Civil War, not just being kind of the cause of it, if you want to put it that way. At Chapel Hill High, it was just presented as a thing. Here are all the facts. Here's what all these people did. By the way, here's what all these white people did. Okay, I mean, it was a long time before I knew that black folks had a history. I missed that coming out of Lincoln, okay, because I know that process had just started. I was just beginning to learn that, you know, there were black people involved in the American Revolution, okay? So I had that kind of gap in there. I didn't get the black version of it. I got the white version of it. You understand what I mean? So then later on, when I learned the black version of it and I put it with this, and I'm like, whoa, man, now, you know, that's great. I'm glad that we had a role here, and that we weren't just, you know, still out picking cotton while these white people were out, you know, fighting for our liberty and stuff, you know? So anyway, a bit facetious there, but I think you know what I mean.
you have any preparation for going to the junior high school? Did anyone in your family or church or anyone else talk to you about how to handle situations there?
No. I just walked in the door. Well, I mean, how do you teach somebody that? You know, I mean, unless you've been through it, which they wouldn't have, how do you know? I mean, consider most of the people dealt with the majority culture as a worker. And I was about to begin to interact with them on a different level. Even if they had gone to college with them, it would have been different, because you're more mature. I mean, I went to a situation, you know, teenagers, man, they are brutal, okay? And like I said, if you hadn't been there, it would be very difficult to prepare someone. So no, I just walked in. Aside from the, you know, the admonitions that you get anytime you go out to the first day of school from your parents, you know, be good, mind the teacher, you know what I'm saying? That was pretty much it, I think. I don't remember anything special.
How did you handle the feelings you must have had after the physical and verbal abuses that you had to put up with?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm glad you asked that. I went through a lot. I went from not understanding what was going on. In psychology, there's this range of learning, I think. So I don't remember exactly what the principle is, but you start with not knowing what you don't know. And then you go to the just beginning to understand what you don't know. And then you know what you don't know. Then you know what you don't know. That's the third one, right? I think maybe there's a fourth one. Well, I started out not knowing what to expect and what I should be expecting. And then later on, and this was late into high school, and then as I've gotten into college, then it was knowing what I didn't know and beginning to understand what happened. Well, it was too late to be angry then. But I got angry anyway. I figured I deserved it. Then I went from college into the military, and I had, at that time, by then, the civil rights movement, the civil rights movement had moved into that next movement there, where there was very much a conflict between the races, with the Black Panthers and the war in Vietnam was divided the country, stuff like that. And in going through that period, I got to vent that and some other anger in some of the things that I did then, or that I was able to do then. Nothing against the law. I mean, I was in the military and so forth, but I just had the opportunity to get some of that out. And to because, as you can tell, I'm a fairly verbal person, I was able to relate that. You know, I didn't have to wear those feelings. And then later on...
How did you do that?
Well, it was through some of the groups and associations that I had in the military. The military was a definer in that area. I got a chance to meet people who had other experiences. I got a chance to look back at what I had been able to do in my life and realize that I didn't really... I think that was the place where I learned that the time that I learned that what had gone on in the past was out of ignorance. Because a lot of what I'd had an opportunity to do in my life, a lot of even those kids hadn't had the opportunity to do. So, I kind of switched from the inferior feeling to the superior feeling. And when that happens, you know, I mean, it really sounds trite, but at that point I realized I didn't have anything to hold against these people. Even the people who did me the most injury, physical, mental, whatever, that tried to do that kind of injury to me, I just know they were stupid people. They still are stupid people. If they were making that mistake then and they didn't learn from it, you know, they still are. I don't know. As I said, some of them I see, some of them I don't. But anyway, so I met some people in the military who really helped me mature. And then when I was in the military, an interesting thing, I was stationed in Japan for about 6 or 7 months before I went to Vietnam. And it just kind of worked out that I spent a lot of time by myself in Japan, which, again, you know, I did in school. And I would I stayed off base for a while, and I would walk back and forth to base. It was a couple miles. And, you know, I would have time to think. Just think. The place I was stationed, Iwakuni, is right out on the ocean. There was a seawall that ran around the base. And I could just get up and walk on that, get on that seawall and walk for, well, I won't say hours because it got pretty cold out there. But, I mean, you know, walk distances and just have an opportunity to think and to get things out.